You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. And now time for the Classic Car Show with Steve Rinaldo and Jim Weber.
Okay, we've got Mr. Nick Ellis on the line with us. And Nick, I was thumbing through Hemming and saw your old ad, and I thought, gee, we're in the same business, or we're on the same page anyway. And that page happens to be that since we started the show, Steve Rinaldo and I really focused in on how are we going to help keep the hobby, the business alive. And the way you do it is you got to bring new blood in, and new blood means teenagers and kids that are looking for something and have a love of cars like we all do. So as I was going through Hemming and saw RPM, I decided to call, and we're very fortunate to have Nick Ellis on. He's the program officer for RPM, and he's going to tell us all about it today, and we're prepared. Nick, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to America's Web Radio.
So, yeah, the RPM Foundation is very much in line with what you're talking about. You're talking about the need to get more young people involved, not just in the skilled trades, but specifically for automotive and automotive restoration. And this is a situation that really comes out of that push in the 1970s and 80s towards pursuing a four-year college degree for everybody across the board. And what we've seen as a result of that is that there's this great lack of skilled labor these days. You know, there's need for plumbers or carpenters or electricians, but probably the industry that's hurting the most is automotive. It's estimated that there's every year a need for 175,000 new automotive technicians across the country, and that there's only a supply of about 50,000 new entries to the industry. So if you look at how that's affecting automotive in general, you can imagine how that's affecting automotive and motorcycle and marine restoration, because this is, I think this will resonate with you guys and with your audience, the belief that vehicles are more than just a way of getting from one place to another is something that, you know, if you're into classic car collecting, you really believe that. You believe that these are part of our heritage, they're part of our culture, they're part of our community. And it takes a very special person to want to pursue that as a career. You're not learning an industry, you're learning a craft. So what the RPM Foundation does is we try to educate and inform young people about the possibilities of a career in the industry, and we do our best to support programs that provide educational opportunities for young people. We do scholarship funding. We've funded McPherson College, which is, if you know, it's the only four-year bachelor's degree program in the country in automotive restoration. We fund Pennsylvania College of Technology, Central Carolina Community College, Alfred State College in New York. Any college, any post-secondary or high school program that has curriculum as part of their, restoration as part of their curriculum, we try to support that and make sure that the students have scholarship funding and support to complete their education. You know, so that's in a nutshell how we got started.
Over the years, we've talked about it, and as we've interviewed museums and so forth, how important it is to let kids know what automobiles have done for the United States. They've built us, and you know, our major highways and our transportation of goods and services, our over-the-road trucks that bring our most needed things, like we just found out how important toilet paper is. And so we have that going on continually as well. So I'm going to turn you all over to Steve and Jim.
Okay. Can you hear me now, Nick?
I can hear you, Steve. Yeah.
Oh, I'm Jim.
That's Jim.
Yeah. Yeah. I have one question. Are you affiliated at all with any of the big car collections and museums?
We are. We have a partnership with LeMay America's Car Museum, and I saw that you had Ashley.
I thought
Bison,
so. I thought so.
Years back.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wondered because I think your address is at Tacoma, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So if you look at the structure of our organization, there's the larger organization is America's Automotive Trust, which is a convener of like-minded nonprofits. So underneath America's Automotive Trust is LeMay America's Car Museum, the RPM Foundation, and TechForce Foundation. And TechForce Foundation works very similarly to the RPM Foundation in that they support pathways to careers for young people in automotive, but they do it for automotive technology, collision and repair. So these are the students that are going to be going into dealerships, diesel shops, body and collision repair shops. So it's modern technology, and then RPM tries to foster students who are into classic cars and motorcycles and marine.
Okay.
Nick, all right, Nick, you guys don't actually have a facility. You don't do training. You support the people that do the training, correct?
We do, but you brought up an interesting point. We're actually developing right now our own internship and apprenticeship programs. So if you look at the organizations that we support, FERSON, Pennsylvania College of Technology, and so on, if you add up all of the students that are attending coming out of these post-secondary institutions, every year you're looking at maybe 100 students, and the demand is far greater than that.
Oh, heavens yes.
So, yes.
Yeah, and then another thing to consider is the entry-level pay for this career, it can be kind of restrictive when you've built up school debt, if you're taking out loans to attend a post-secondary. So we developed this solution in this apprenticeship program where we're recruiting host shops across the country that have the willingness and the ability to teach our curriculum in their shops. We've put together a task force, absolutely terrific task force, of shop owners and educators to develop our own curriculum. We're looking at what's being taught in automotive technology and collision repair classes, and we're saying, okay, what's not being taught in those classes right now? What are the skills that a new entry into the restoration field would need to know if they've taken these classes? And we're complementing that curriculum with our own task list of, you're not learning carburetor rebuilding right now in an automotive technology class. You're not learning how to work with a buck to create a new fender in automotive collision repair. So we're taking that, we're going to the host shops, and we're saying, can you teach this curriculum in your shop? And then we're turning to the schools, and a critical component of this is finding instructors that understand what I was talking about earlier, that this is not just somebody who is interested in cars. This is somebody who really, truly loves vehicles and classic cars and our automotive heritage and really wants to learn a craft instead of a profession. Those are the candidates that we want to be taking to the host shops and presenting to the shops and saying, here's a real rock star, and this is somebody who's going to come into your shop, learn this curriculum that we've developed, and become one of the future craftspeople. So we don't have a facility of our own, but we're working on creating this network of shops across the country that really serve as our educational facilities.
I did a lot when I was on the AACA and Horses Carriage National Board. I did quite a bit with the youth programs, like the Haggerty Youth Judging and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
And how would a young guy that's sort of interested that Grandpa has a Model A in the garage, how would he find out about this? I know of you, but I don't know about you. How would a young guy find out about this? How would this get spread to somebody who may have a real interest in getting into this? I see your ad in Hemmings, but I just wondered how would you find out about this stuff?
That's an excellent question. It's obviously one of the reasons I'm very glad that you all reached out to talk to us. We need more partners like you who are willing to talk to us and kind of echo our message out throughout their network. We have a terrific ambassador network. If you're interested in supporting our cause and, you know, kind of being our boots on the ground, because we're a small organization, we're a small non-for-profit, and we can't afford to be everywhere at once. So we rely on our ambassador network to go and talk to the schools, to evaluate host shops for us, to go to car clubs and different events and spread the word for us. Another huge, huge component of this is, again, what I talked about earlier, that relationship with the instructors, because if we find those really dedicated above and beyond high school and post-secondary instructors that understand the need for talented young people and get what we're trying to accomplish, they can pick out those students that this is really going to resonate with and, you know, suggest to them, you should really apply for this program. You should talk to the RPM Foundation. We don't just do the apprenticeship and internship programs. We do career services for young people. We bring students to different events to introduce them to different possibilities within the industry. So there's a lot that we can offer young people, but yeah, to your point, we need to be able to get that message out there, and for that we need partners like you, and we need our ambassadors, and we need our instructors.
Well, have you considered, you know, because I know a lot of, I've been around this hobby, for I grew up in this hobby, and have you considered contacting, or have you contacted the major clubs, if you will? Now, see, I'm more interested. I think there's a lot of stuff available for somebody who wants to become a Ford mechanic or a Chevy mechanic or Toyota or whatever. I think there's a lot of that that's available. But in the antique and classic cars, now you may keep mentioning Penn State. My understanding is that Penn College closed their program for lack of interest.
They put the program on hiatus, and so. Just a little background. So they used to offer an entire restoration educational track, and they kind of suffered for lack of enrollment. So what they did was, and I thought this was a great approach, they've added it now as an elective at the end of their regular automotive and collision repair tracks.
Yeah, Earl and I were pretty good friends. Earl Mowry. But anyway, you know, the major clubs like AACA, Horses Carriage, Classic Car Club of America, Model A Restorers Club, I belong to all of those and have been quite involved. And those are the guys, those are the people that have the biggest far reach in this hobby. And those are the guys that I think would... they would benefit the most from your guys getting kids into shops. I know guys. I have a couple of good friends. Antique Bill Word, Antique Engine Rebuilder. I was just down to see him, and he tried for years to get apprentices to learn how to pour Babbitt. He has every K.R. Wilson Ford tool you can find for T's and A's. And he could never find anybody. When they found out, you know, you got to pick this block up and set it up and hand drill the Babbitt we poured, it just wasn't sitting in front of a computer punching buttons.
Yeah. Hey, I just had an idea. Nick, you might think about this. Every year at the AACA annual meeting in February, they ask for speakers to do presentations for seminars. And that would be perfect for the RPM Foundation. I mean, just what you're telling us on the radio this morning would be to go there and make a presentation to them about your foundation and any, you know,
sure, that's a great idea.
Handouts.
And a trade show booth.
And a trade show booth.
I don't think it costs anything. I don't know if you've looked into that.
But as a foundation, I trust, I'll bet they would.
So, you bring up an excellent point. And first of all, that's something that I would love to do. I'd very much welcome making a presentation really in front of any car club that wants to hear our message. We have been approached by some of the clubs because the clubs are, like you said, they're a terrific outlet, but they're also experiencing the same issue that we're up against, depending on the club. You know, their members are starting to age out, and there's not enough young people coming into the clubs.
And Steve's one of the age outers.
I hate to look around behind me. There's that guy following me from the nursing home or the funeral home with a tape measure.
No, that's Mrs. Swigert.
Yeah, Mrs. Swigert. Yeah, she used to do. Anyway, she has a big museum up in Pennsylvania. I know Pat real well. When you'd meet her, she used to take a tape measure out of her pocket and say, you're a size 6 1/4. She was really fun. She was really funny. But
it's like that Clint Eastwood movie where he says, get three coffins together.
Dirty Harry.
Another one, there's 75,000 people in the Porsche Club of America. And there's a whole separate group called the 356 Registry. And there's no fuel injection. There's no electronic ignition in those. And those people are so adamant about authenticity that they even go down to the brand of screw that was supplied to the Germans when they built the cars. So there's another group that you may want to appeal to.
Oh, there's tons of them.
Yeah. Well, you'd rattle off a bunch, too, and I'm just thinking that's
sports car people.
That's the biggest car club of the sports car people.
Yeah. And, Nick, I think you'll be amazed that you will get some feedback from the show we're doing today, as a matter of fact.
I certainly hope so. Again, from the car club perspective, you know, we're working on trying to put together some programming to appeal to young people so that we can go to these car clubs and we can say, hey, you know, can you host a tech session where, you know, you mentor a group of young people and show them how to just do something as simple as change the spark plugs, because it's moments like that that bring young people into this interest in this industry. Yeah. We're not seeing enough of these days come on into the garage and let's change the spark plugs on the family car. It's just something that's, you know, is kind of lost as technology on the new cars advances to the point where you open up the hood and you can't really do much on the car. So I think the car clubs providing outlets like that to the young people would be a great way, A, to introduce young people to their membership, but also introduce them to the wider world of the possibilities of career in the industry.
Well, you know, somehow I'll have to try to get Dave's number or get your number from David, and I'll give you a call, and I could put you in touch with a lot of people that I can just give you a name over the air because he calls in all the time. Call AACA in Hershey and talk to Steve Moskowitz. They're the biggest
fan.
That's the national director, or now he's CEO.
Oh, yeah. And, we have some folks in our network that have a great relationship with Steve. So
about Philadelphia, the convention, and all kinds of stuff. You won't find a guy that's more connected in the hobby than he is. There just isn't anybody that's more connected than he is.
That's great.
And just call, you know, during the week, just call Hershey and talk to him and.
have, you know, exposure to these cars and these technologies so that they can decide, well, maybe this is something that I actually want to pursue.
Well,
I'd be interested to hear what you guys thought about, as far as the clubs go, because we've been having this conversation. When you look at the clubs, there's a certain sort of exclusivity that with the clubs where, you know, okay, if you are a member of the Ferrari Club of America, how does a young person get involved with that club when the mark that they are representing is priced so far out of a young person's reach? How do you get a young person integrated with that club?
Well,
I'd be curious to know if you guys have
all right. If I was a kid and or I was looking for, I had a business and I was looking for somebody, I don't care that they own the car. They just need to, like, Porsche mechanics make a really serious income. You know, I would be more interested in going, having somebody that would contact the Ferrari Club of America and let the club take care of it. It's not your job. You don't own a Ferrari repair facility. But the club knows who does, who's looking, who's good, who's bad, who's marginal, what skills are really needed. I would let the club be your spokesman for that particular market, to get the young people into the right facility, because you can't know everything about everything.
No, and Steve's right. There are specialty shops that restore Ferraris, like Bob Smith in Texas and Motion Performance up in Wisconsin. But to go even further, the Nethercutt collection, well, we'll come back to that. We want to take a break, and I've got a couple of ideas for you. So, David?
Whether cruising the strip in a 57 Chevy or taking the family on a vacation in a 71 Oldsmobile Vista Cruiser, you need to tune in to Classic Cars with Steve Rinaldo and Jim Weber every Saturday from 8 to 9 a.m. on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Hi, this is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. Just talking to you about anti-car insurance, I think that if you're looking for the best coverage for your classic car, consider J.C. Taylor Insurance. They've been my insurer for years in this hobby and have the top rating of all of the insurance companies in the hobby.
And we're back on the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio. We're glad to have you listening to us today, and we've got a very special guest on. Nick Ellis, he's the program director for RPM, and if you don't know what RPM is, Google it, RPM Foundation, and find out. And, you know, you all have been talking around on getting kids involved in the hobby of classic cars and restoration and so forth, and, you know, unfortunately, we missed a generation in here that didn't teach their kids about cars, and now it's gotten to the point, particularly with the later model cars, where you can't just open the hood and say, here's how you set the timing. And, you know, we really need our grandparents to take their grandkids to the museums and show them what they knew. And, you know, we had a car like that when I was growing up. We had a car like that, yada-da-da-da. And it's, you know, it's got to be a combined effort, and we can't let anybody, politically or anybody else, tell us what goes in history books. There should be chapter after chapter of what transportation has meant to this country, and, you know, if you learn as a kid how to work on a car, you're going to be able to work on that truck as well, and, you know, it's just a combined package, so... Nick, I'm very glad that you decided to join us today, and we're going to keep going with Steve and Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Okay.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, Nick, I'm just thinking, you've got some incredible car collections in this country, and as you are fully aware of the LeMay, but you take a look at a restoration shop like J.B. Nethercutt and the Mullen Foundation in California, and then you go to Fred Simeone in Philadelphia, and there's so many more of them around, and they all have docents and volunteers now, but they've got a few key people. But what happens when those few key people go away? There's no apprentice there.
I'm never going.
Yeah. Well, there's some guy with a big big stick with a hook on it coming after you. Anyway, my point is there's plenty of opportunities. It's just how do you get to them? And that's the key thing. And I think if you would start with the AACA and that club, because that club has so many other clubs integrated with it, or people like Steve and me that belong to that, but we belong to other car clubs too. To me, it's phenomenal what you're doing. And we've had some of the trade schools, including McPherson College and Alfred State.
And we had Penn Tech.
Penn Tech. And then we even did UTI.
Great.
Yeah, well, the greatest one was when we did their NASCAR school.
Yeah,
they've got a NASCAR school, and boy, that was fun. How can you build...
we had a couple of UTI students in the RPM network who've attended that program. They love it.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. Just one thing sticks in my mind. They build three cars on the same chassis plate with the same materials, but all three cars handle differently on the setups. And it's I think these cars have personalities.
And it's very nice that they make the tire changers wear a mask now while they're changing those tires. I mean, that's a
hoo-hoo. Oh, Lord. All right. Okay, Nick, we've been talking. Tell us more, or give us some ideas. Or that we could share.
You touched on something that I was hoping to mention. You talked about the museums and how important the museums are in introducing young people to the not just the collector hobby, but also the industry. And RPM Foundation, through our grant funding, has a terrific relationship with some great museums across the country, not just LeMay America's Car Museum, but we have supported internships at the Gilmore Car Museum.
Excellent.
At Peterson Museum. We just did a really great internship with Auburn Court Duesenberg Museum.
That's a great place.
Super excited about this one.
What a beautiful place.
They've got one intern, and they're sharing the intern between three museums in that in that museum row that they have right there in Auburn.
Right.
And I love that because that's taking, the administration of the intern and the funds that we were able to supply for that intern, but that intern is getting exposure to three completely different types of vehicles, and all three museums are getting the benefit of having this intern on their premises. So there is that new generation of museum curators and collection managers coming up through that internship network. And very, very reassured by that, because the museums are vital to maintaining a young person's interest in this industry.
Nick, back to RPM. I doubt that we have a lot of kids listening today. I don't know. Steve sort of runs them off with his cane and walker. But anyway, we probably have some grandparents and some parents listening. So what is the process of working with you all from a young person's standpoint and finding out about an internship and so forth?
Yeah, that's a great point. Just visit the website. Have the young person sign up for our mailing list. We're always putting out information about our scholarships, our programs, the apprenticeship program and the internship program. We've got the ability to text information to, one of the funny things is, I'm discovering that young people aren't really using email. And, to me, I'm coming up on 50 years old, and that was a new exciting technology to me at one point, and now that's kind of gone the wayside. So we're adapting as much as we can to appeal to young people and communicate the way young people do. So the key is, if you, you know, if you have a child or a grandchild that you think has an affinity for this, put us in touch with them. We're very, very personal with them. We, you know, we talk one-on-one with them about what their goals are, what their aspirations are, and then once you're part of the RPM network, you're part of the network for as long as you want to, as long as you want to participate. We will introduce you to other people in our network that can help you along your career, and you know, it can be a life-changing relationship. I just connected a young UTI student with one of the people at Singer Vehicle Design in Los Angeles, and I don't know if you're familiar with Singer. They take Porsches from the late 80s and early 90s, and they turn them into supercars. So this is an amazing company, and here this young person came in, and he had an affinity for Porsches, and he was attending UTI, and he's this bright, personable young guy, and I immediately thought of Singer for him. So we can do that for people at all different levels. We just need to make that first contact. So if you've got somebody that you think would benefit from the RPM network, please have them contact us, reach out, and we're happy to talk to them personally.
All right, Nick, give us your email address and your phone number, please.
My email address is info, or I'm going to give you the RPM email address because that comes to me anyway. It's I-N-F-O, info, at RPM. Foundation, and the phone number is 855-537-4579. And if you want to find out about us online, you just go to rpm.foundation.
Okay, excellent. Now, at the end of the show, I want you to repeat that again in case one of us old guys couldn't write fast enough.
Yeah, my quill ran out of ink halfway through. Yeah.
Hey, are you still using your abacus?
No. I sold that and I got a Ferrari instead.
Oh, okay.
I'm driving to Texas to get it fixed. What are you talking about?
You know, you're joking, but I learned on a manual typewriter how to type. So I'm still, when I sit down at a computer, I still hammer the keys as hard as you used to.
No.
What do you do when you take the swing at the page?
Yeah, the carriage.
The carriage.
Oh, yeah, I remember that in typing class. Yeah. I remember all the cute girls in typing class. That's why I went.
I just smacked the monitor across the desk. Yeah.
That's a good idea. That helps.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah, he says he's coming up on 50. Hell, he's a kid.
Yeah. You wouldn't enjoy this company. Yeah.
No. I got to go get some water and take my morning pills. Takes me 20 minutes.
This group knows the first heaters in cars when they were heating the bricks by the fireplace and then putting them in the car.
Oh, they had the brass cars had a coal thing in there in the back.
I was trying to
describe to somebody. Do you guys remember on the Model A's there used to be that accessory exhaust manifold that had the flow through that would heat air and then go through a vent.
A
hole in the firewall.
That was the way to get heat into the car.
Yeah, I have a Model A, and it gets so hot in that car. You can't stand it because if you get the actual period one, it has a waffle on the top, and it gets so hot in that car, you can't stand to be in the thing.
Yeah. And didn't they used to have a little picnic setup where you could put like a little metal container on top of that, and it would heat up food when you're on your
when
way.
You, if you go to the Model A Club's convention, they have a manifold cooking contest. They have a manifold cooker, and they have a contest in who can make the best meal on the manifold cooker.
Yeah, and you remember the water bags they used to hang on the front?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember that.
You're a kid. There was literally a canvas bag that you hung on the bumper when you went across the Lincoln Highway, and in case your car overheated, because back then, well, this was after thermosiphon, but not too many.
New stuff.
Yeah, thermostats.
new stuff.
Yeah.
They were doing that back in the 50s.
Like I said, I can put you in contact with a lot of people. Another one that I think is worth calling.
You'd be amazed at the contacts that Steve has at the nursing home.
Yeah. I get the bingo. I get all the prizes for bingo. But anyway, another good one would go to a Horse's Carriage website, look up the editor, Tracy Lesher. She has two teenage boys, young teenage boys, and they're always looking for good stories for the Horse's Carriage Gazette. And I think Tracy would be very interested in publishing a story in the Gazette about RPM. I really do. And you can just tell her that Stinky Steve said call. The boys just call me Stinky Steve. I don't know why. I take a bath once a week. But anyway, they...
In the pond.
but call. Look up Tracy. She's another one after Steve Moskowitz that has a vast reading. And so does Natalie Weaver, who's the editor of Model T Club International magazine. And that's a pretty big club too, and those three right there can you can get in touch with a bunch, and I can't remember who the current editor of Model A Restorers Club is, but Steve can tell you who they are, because everybody, it seems in this hobby, that most everybody who is in, we'll just say, you know, belongs to another club, also is a member of AACA. Because that's the grant—that's the umbrella organization. He's the main one.
Yeah, that's why it's so important, I think, that you can get a hold of Steve and see if you can't do a presentation
at the convention.
At the convention, if they hold it in February.
I would love to.
Yeah.
That's worth it.
And if I can, you know, you kind of touched on something that's, one of the latest initiatives with RPM is we want to get these stories out there into the world, and what we could really use is help with telling those stories. So if there are people in your network that would like to write articles for us, we don't really have much of a budget to pay writers to put these articles together. We have a lot of publications that would welcome content if we could put it together for them, but we really need...
You write the stuff. You write the stuff and get it to them, and they'll be more than... The editors of these magazines will be more than glad to work with you on stuff.
Yeah, we find that, but they usually are looking for kind of a finished article. So if you've got people in the network that would like to donate some writing time to us, I'd be very appreciative of that.
Well, talk to the editors. They know who they are could help you. And another guy that I think you might want to call, who's a friend of mine, is John Meyer. He was the past president of the Automotive Historic
Society.
Automotive Historical Society, a writer society or whatever, and he's in California. he was the editor of Horses Carriage Gazette plus some other clubs' newsletters for years, and he's an excellent contact. You know, a bunch of people, mostly brass era stuff. So there are a lot of avenues out there, and I think, you know, like I see your ad in Hemmings, but I get Hemmings and I just skim through this stuff. I immediately go to the ads. That's what I get Hemmings for.
Yeah. One other thing, when you contact Steve, find out, he probably will know this quicker than anybody, Steve Moskowitz, yeah, the other national conventions of some of the bigger clubs.
Yeah, well, Horses Carriage has a big convention every year.
Yeah, and the other one that I'm thinking about is the Cadillac LaSalle Club or the Thunderbird Club, because both of those clubs
have big conventions. I know the guys there.
Yeah, and they have big publications, and I'm sure there's a bunch of Chevy clubs and Ford clubs. So it's just it's getting the information to those people so they can start working on their children.
This is desperate. I mean, in this hobby, this is becoming desperate. It really is.
Well, dealerships, the same thing with modern-day technicians.
Yeah.
They're having a heck of a time.
Well, that's what Jason was telling me Friday. He said, I can't find people. He said, I'm so backed up, I can't find kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
That's why I'm very happy that we're affiliated with the Tech Force Foundation, because they're doing the best they can to introduce young people onto the modern side of things.
Yeah.
So, within America's Automotive Trust, we've really got solutions for all aspects of the industry shortage. It's a nice relationship. It's a nice coalition.
And these kids can go in there and make a lot of money.
Yeah, well, yes. I got my degree in Ethiopian place settings, and I made $12,000 a year at McDonald's.
Yeah, but you see, you didn't get a sub-degree in women's studies.
Okay, with that being said, we'll let folks think about it. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this.
Hi, my name is Steve Rinaldo, host of the Classic Car Show on America's Web Radio, talking to you about antique car insurance. In this hobby that I've been part of for years, not all insurance companies and insurance coverage is the same. I would suggest that you call J.C. Taylor or visit jctaylor.com to find out some information about some of the best antique car insurance you can get, such as agreed value insurance for your classic car. Again, when you get ready to insure your classic, antique, or even your street rod, call J.C. Taylor Insurance or visit jctaylor.com.
My name is Kyle Hayes, a motorsports student at Alfred State College. Every year, Alfred State students compete in the Great Race, which is a cross-country time endurance rally for vintage vehicles. As you can imagine, it's pretty costly. I'm asking for your help. Your donation can make it possible for these students to live their passion and promote the vintage automobile industry. Please visit our site at give.alfredstate.edu and search Great Race to learn more and help us reach our goal. Thank you.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
And we're back on the Classic Car Show. Our guest today is Nick Ellis. He is the program officer for RPM. And, we're talking about the importance of young folks finding out about the business. And as you all were talking, and Steve was talking earlier, that you can walk out of these schools and you got a six-figure job in front of you. And depending on how you do, it can even be better than that. So, it's maybe we should just, in your ads, you should just put dollar signs and say, are you ready to make a great living? And, but, when the three of us were growing up, that would make a whole lot of difference. Today, I guess with the culture change or whatever it is, I don't know that they care about money like the three of us did. But anyway, it's a heck of an opportunity for kids it's not just in the classic car industry. It's in every industry, from arc welding up and down the gambit. We used to call them trade schools, and oh my God, you would go to a trade school? You have to go to a four-year college and learn nothing. But it's changed. Things have changed. And I certainly appreciate what you all are doing.
Thank you. So I've had some great conversations with instructors at those trade schools, and it's great to talk to. I keep coming back to the instructors being so vital to this, because they're really the ones that they can pick out a young person who really has an affinity for this type of work and really nurture them and put them down the right path. And they address that issue of, the perception that shop class, in the 50s was like, where you put the bad kids. Okay, these are the ones that are going to cause trouble, so let's stick them in shop class. And the difference between that perception and reality couldn't be more stark. The kids who excel in shop class, they're very, very bright kids. They just learn a different way. They're tactile learners. They need to have their hands on things, and they need to visualize what they're working on. And, you know, they're brilliant young people. So, you know, encouraging them down that path is vital. We need the buy-in from parents to, you know, realize that, you know, a blue-collar trade is, you know, just as, you know, can be just as rewarding and lucrative as, you know, some of the white-collar trades. And it's, as far as the rewarding side, there's that adage, you know, you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. One of the things that I love to tell the groups of students that we bring on our programs is, you know, when you talk about a career in the trades, there's great opportunities out there for plumbers, for electricians, for carpenters, but you don't get a group of plumbers in a parking lot on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning comparing their welds. This is the only trade that really has a culture attached to it, so that you can really genuinely love what you're doing and make a terrific living at it.
Well, and the other thing, Nick, is when I grew up, there were Ford guys and Chrysler guys and Chevy guys, and of course now they're probably Honda guys or BMW guys or Toyota or Porsche or something. But it's a cult, and you get involved in that. But I want to toss something else out at you. Working environments, of course, I was a line tech back in the 60s, and our shops weren't air-conditioned. Today,
oh, God, they're beautiful. Some
today,
of these places.
Yeah, you go into a dealership, and they're new facilities, and the shops are air-conditioned.
The tile floors,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, a sewer.
Isn't that something? Yeah, that's another part of the perception that really needs to change, that you're going into this cave, and you know, and that you're going to be working under these terrible conditions. You know, that's a perception that was formed before there were, you know, regulations on the industry for safety and for longevity of the workers.
I used to wear miners.
Yeah, you
I used
go into
to wear
a lot
miner's
of these shops,
helmet.
And they're absolutely spotless, clean,
and
you know, pleasant, and the noise level is very tolerable, and it's a genuinely nice place to work.
Yeah, all you got to do is watch one of Jay Leno's videos and look how beautiful his place is.
Yeah.
But Nethercutt, I was in Nethercutt, I'm going to say probably 15 years ago, I had a private tour of that, and it just blew my mind. And they didn't have 3D printers then. Today, you don't need to worry about a part. You just
make one,
and a cylinder heads and everything, powdered metal, and
isn't
off
that
you
amazing?
Go. Yeah, it's just phenomenal. And you're talking about bucks. I mean, I can understand bucks in an English wheel for an aluminum body, but outside of that, who can use it? And there are guys that need that today, because some of these old cars, the alloy bodies are so messed up, they literally have to recreate them.
Well, yeah.
So there's so many aspects of this trade that you can get into. And we, a long time ago, interviewed a guy that had Faye Butler, the metal guy that teaches classes.
Yeah.
We've interviewed him. What I mean, you go up there for 2 weeks. What an education, and that's all supplemental to what you would learn in one of the schools like McPherson. It's sort of like fine tuning, and
exactly.
Yeah, it's just wonderful the creativity that's going on today, and it's just we got to
expand on it.
Yeah, we've got to get these kids excited about that. Because when I grew up, you had to have a house and a car, you had to have a savings account. And
I had a car and a tent.
Yeah, a tent. Yeah.
The car was more important than the house.
You drove a TC with a kerosene heater.
That's
in the winter.
That's true, I did. So, yeah, I did. That's goofy.
But my point is, they look at things differently today, but you still need the same things. You still need housing.
You know, again, back to our earlier point, that the only way I think that we're going to get to the kids is through their grandparents and possibly their parents. But there's so many parents today that wouldn't have a clue how to change a tire, much less know what's under the hood.
How many of them have had a flat tire?
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, so true, yeah. I think our target, your target, our target, your ads should be, grandparents, you have an important job to do. And let the grandparents work on the kids. Because we're not, you and the three of us aren't going to be, not going to be touching the teenagers. And there's so many teenagers today. I lived and breathed from the time I was 7 or 8 years old to get my driver's license. All I wanted to do was get a car and be able to drive. And today, kids,
I don't care.
You know, I don't care whether I drive or not. Let mommy take me. And it's incredible. I can't understand it. But so we have to get to the, I think it's the grandparents. I think we've already missed the boat with the parents, and we have to get to the grandparents.
Yeah.
Nick? Yeah, because you don't hear a lot of stories of you know, young people getting into this interest in this industry because they, you know, they picked up a magazine or because they stumbled across something on their own. Most of the time when you talk to somebody, it is a parent or a grandparent who introduced them to it. So those influencers in a young person's life are vital. So if, you know, again, if you're out there and you're listening to the program, you've got somebody in your family or in your circle of influence that you think would get an affinity for this, please bring them in, you know, and introduce them to it. It might take a while for it to take hold. Be patient, you know, show them how the technology of the time works, show them the appeal of, you know, the design and the function of these cars. Like, it's, if you look at some of the design on these cars, it's a work of art. And if you can appreciate that, and if that resonates with you, you know, there's no stopping you from that point. You can go on to a career in this and truly love it. Yeah. And I want to touch a little bit on what was said before about, you know, in the past, you had to have a house and you had to get married and you had to have a car by a certain age. And if you look at the trend, people are buying that first house later, and they're getting married later, and they're having kids later in life. And it's interesting to watch that kind of follow along with the trend, with the push for a four-year education and a degree. So you would think that there's a correlation between getting out of college, having all this debt, having to pay off the debt, and then starting your life.
Nick, I'm going to have to interrupt you. We have run out of time. I told you it went fast, and we are out of time. So thank you so much for being on.
You got me talking.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. You're the best.
Yeah. I'll call you, and we can talk a little bit.
Can we invite you back?
Absolutely. Have me back as many times as you want. I'm so happy to be here, and I had such a terrific time talking to you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.